She was almost 37 and out of time. Like others, she had wanted children, a husband, a home. Like others, she had a hope chest, embroidered dreams, crocheted illusions. Like others, she had expectations. She wanted a man who was clean, polite but not fawning, educated but not vain about it, gentle but not weak, not given to snuff or overly given to alcohol, sloth, and smiling at women. In 2 months, she would be up to hopeless and her expectations down to clean. At her feet, under the still fresh mound of dirt and already dusty bits of ribbon, was her father. A hard man, some said selfish. A righteous man, some said self-righteous. Her mother had died when she was 12, and she had taken on her mother's work of taking care of him. He frequently quoted the Bible regarding a virtuous woman and a daughter's duty toward her father. Standing over his grave, she felt an emptiness in the place where duty had been, a sadness where love had been, a pain where anger had been, and a blank where hope had been. She shook the dust off the ribbons and retied them to the wooden cross where she had placed them for a bit of color. She had taken the ribbons off the Christmas tree. Her father wasn't much for frivolity, but being a Christian, he let her have a Christmas tree. It was still 5 days until Christmas, but she wouldn't be needing the ribbons or the tree. She had been loved and ill-used, and now she was alone. He was almost 45 and almost out of luck. Like others, he had wanted a piece of land, a strong, healthy wife, and a passel of hardy, handy kids to help with the work. Like others, he had expectations. A woman, old enough not to be flighty, not too old to work and have kids. Girl enough to be tender-hearted, but woman enough not to be weepy. Not so pretty as to be spoiled or so ugly as to be mean. Not too fast out of bed to be a comfort or too slow to have the coffee ready by first light when it was time to go do the work. Not so big as to be clumsy or so small as to be worthless with the mules or the bearer of children too small to handle post hole diggers. At his feet, under the still fresh mound of dirt and flowers and feathers he had taken off of her hats, was his wife. She had been pretty, some said frail. She had been cheerful, some said giddy. She had told him she loved him and sang him songs while the biscuits burned. The garden went untended, and he had had to hire a hand to help him castrate his calves, survey his fence line, and scald his hogs. Standing over her grave, he felt emptiness where impatience had been. Grief where love had been, emptiness where the disappointment had been, dead where the dreams had been. He had been loved, but not helped, and now he was alone. He noticed her because she was crying softly and trying to retie the red and green ribbons so they did not tangle in the wind. She was healthy. She noticed him because he had tears in his eyes and was trying to keep the little bouquet of feathers and flowers from blowing off the grave. He was clean. She stood and the ribbons tangled until they looked like something that had been discarded. He stood up and the feathers blew away and the flowers rolled up at his feet. "I got a hammer and some nails in the wagon if they will help you," he said, holding his hat in his hands. He had feelings. "Well, I'm obliged. I got a pen if you can use it," she said. She knew how to use a hammer. She watched him as he gathered the flowers and feathers and deftly pinned them together. He had gentle hands. He watched as she drove nails into the wooden cross and rearranged the ribbons. She was strong and definite. I got a little something to eat if you'd like a bite, she said. She had brought a basket from town, a generous woman. I've got some water in the wagon, he said, and two cups. A thoughtful man. While they ate, they talked. He had sold everything he had and was on his way to Wanderer Springs. He had hung on longer than he had intended, waiting for his wife to get strong enough to move. Time to make a new start, he said. She had spent her whole life taking care of her father. I ain't never been alone, she said. What was your wife like, she asked. Well, she was a good woman, but made for gentler use than I could afford. What was your pa like? He meant to get the most out of what was his, whether it was a horse or a mule, but he was fair. He expected the same from everybody. I got money for a good farm, he said. I'm a hard worker and a good farmer. I aim to get me a new wife and a passel of kids. I'm partial to kids. I ain't never been sick to speak of. I got all my own teeth. I kept my own hens. I weeded my own garden, milked my own cow, and I helped Pa with the hitching, fencing, and loading. Would you be agreeable to marrying me? His hat was in his hands again. I ain't never been married, she said. Well, I ain't no fool boy for rushing you, he said. Well, how soon do you intend to start with the fathering and the mothering, she asked. I'd be willing to wait until we got to Wanderer Springs. It ain't but 6 days. If we got married today, we could be there by Christmas. He turned and he looked at the wagon, hitched and loaded and ready to go. Yes, she said. I know where the preacher is, but it ain't but 5 days until Christmas. They went by her house and got her hope chest, stood before the preacher, and started for Wanderer Springs, with her holding a bouquet made of the funeral flowers and the Christmas ribbons, and her cow tied behind the wagon. The first day, they talked about the house. Lean-to is the easiest, he said. Not for kids, she said. They settled on a lean-to until the well was dug. 3 rooms before the second child, a storm cellar when the barn was finished, a well house when the fences were done, and a porch before the second barn. He stopped the wagon at dusk. He built a fire while she milked the cow. While she cooked, he unharnessed the team and staked them out with the cow. They ate quickly in silence, using syrup bucket lids for plates. The hope chest would not be unpacked until there was a lean-to. She asked if he had enough to eat, and he said yes. While she scoured the dishes with clean sand, he brought up more firewood and got the blankets out of the wagon. He spread her blankets before the fire and took his to the other side of the wagon. She lay down, fully clothed, and rolled her back to the fire. She saw him watching her from his bed on the other side of the wagon. "I'd like to be hitched by first light," he said. "Will the smell of coffee wake you?" she asked. The second day, they talked about the children. The first boy would be named for her dead father. The first girl would be named for his dead wife. If there wasn't a school by the time the first child would 10, they would mail order books. And instead of picking berries, she would teach them to read, write, and add, cook, can, and milk. Instead of fishing, he would teach them time, calendar, planting and harvesting seasons, sawing, fencing, and water witching. That night, they slept on opposite sides of the wagon, but he asked her if she had enough wood, and she said yes. The third day, they talked about church. "I'm a Baptist," she said. "I don't tolerate dipping, drinking, or dancing. I'm agreeable to church, but I ain't no particular brand," he said. "I don't chew or drink. I don't cuss unless I have to, and I ain't never had no time for dancing." She wanted grace before meals and reading the Bible to children before bed. She could say grace before meals. He would read the Bible to the children, but he would not sing, pray, or testify in front of a bunch of Baptists. She would tithe eggs and butter to the preacher. He would pledge corn or cash to the church. That night, they slept on separate sides of the wagon, but he asked her if she was warm enough, and she said yes. We'll be on our own land by Christmas, he said. 3 more days. Christmas is the day after tomorrow, she said. Today is Wednesday, he said. Today is Thursday. The next day, they were discussing whether to cure ham or smoke it, and he said he didn't like ham as dry as that coyote they saw yesterday. What coyote? Well, that dead coyote we passed back by that little draw. Why, surely you mean wolf, she said. It wasn't full grown, but it was a wolf. The one that was on the right off there by the off mule, he said. Now, that was a coyote. I've known coyotes all my life. I was closer, she said. For a while, they sat in silence, listening to the grinding of the wheels, the jingle of the trace chains, the steady plodding of the mules. Then, without a word, he turned the wagon, and they started on the back track. That night, they slept on separate sides of the wagon. The next day, he clucked up the mules, and they started up the back track. They didn't talk, lost in their own thoughts. He didn't want to be married to no stubborn, grudge-bearing woman. She didn't want to be married to no hard-headed man without the common sense to admit when he was wrong. It was late afternoon when they reached the carcass. And the scavengers had scattered the bones. Both of them stood looking at it for a while, and then he got the shotgun out of the wagon and started off down the draw. She got out the axe and went in the opposite direction. I couldn't get no goose, he said. All I got was a rabbit. I reckon that dog was chasing a rabbit when it died right over there. Well, I'm partial to rabbit, she said. She propped up a rock cedar with rocks. She had decorated the tree with the ribbons and the flowers from her bridal bouquet. I got the tree ready, 'cause we won't know when midnight comes, she said. They ate the rabbit, and when they were finished, he said, I didn't have time to get you no proper gift, but I'd like for our first girl to be named after you. I think that's the nicest present I ever got, she said. We'll name the second one for your first wife. She scoured the pots with sand, and he built up the fire and got the bedding out of the wagon. I didn't have no time to get a proper gift for you, she said. But I would be proud if you spread your bed by the fire. He looked at her for a moment and then spread the bed side by side by the fire. Don't worry about coffee in the morning.
Robert Flynn's The Midnight Clear was read by me, Tess Harford.